Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now it's time for our Friday gathering. This week I'm joined by Fianna Fáil leader in the Shannon and spokesperson on European and Foreign Affairs, Lisa Chambers, deputy leader of the Social Democrats, spokesperson on housing and TD for Dublin Bay North, Cian O'Callaghan, political correspondent with the Sunday Times, Claire Scott, and independent climate and environmental researcher, Saeve O'Neill. And you're all very welcome. Thank you for coming in today. Now, we have debated and discussed this new Dublin traffic plan at length on this show. People might remember a group called the Dublin Retail Alliance. They commissioned this economic impact assessment. That report is out today. It's reported on in the papers, and it has some dire predictions about job losses of close to 2,000, an economic hit of €400 million a year. Cian, I'll come to you on this because you represent Dublin Bay North. From what you've seen of this assessment and what you've heard about it and all of these objections to the traffic plan going ahead next month, are they right, the retailers and the car park owners who are involved in that group, the Dublin Retail Alliance?
Well, I mean, firstly, I think the Dublin City Council probably should have done their own economic, independent economic assessment. And that's a part of a problem to have one coming in from a lobby group. And look, we know the car park owners, for example, don't favour these changes, which would see, would make it more difficult in terms of car use in Dublin City Centre. All the international evidence is when you allocate more space in city centres for pedestrians and for footfall, that's actually good for business and good for retail. And even, for example, in Capel Street, we've seen since it's been pedestrianised a 17% increase in footfall there. So that's good for the businesses and good for the retail.
Yeah, I mean, the organisation, the Alliance, from what we've heard from them on the programme, they're not talking about, they're not saying we should never do this. They're saying that the message that has gone out is that from next month, no cars will be able to come into the city. So they're complaining about the communications around it. Do you think they have a point in that regard?
No, they may well have a point around the communications. I just be wary around if this gets stalled and delayed, because a lot of progress that we need to make on transport and improving public spaces and public realms, it's taking very, very long in Ireland and in Dublin City. We've, very important climate targets, but also we just know that areas thrive when you allocate more space for pedestrians.
So what are you saying? So are you saying it should go ahead then? Richard Shakespeare, the chief executive of Dublin City Council, should just do it in August?
Yeah, I think they should go ahead, because it's just been painfully slow to get to this place. We're way behind some other cities. And when this happens, I mean, there was controversy years ago over pedestrianising Grafton Street, Henry Street, North Hurl Street. No one ever suggests go back on that. There was controversy around Capel Street. It's worked really well. When do we ever allocate more space for pedestrians and for,
Really, so you're saying just go ahead.
Go ahead.
All right.
Do it. Get on with it.
So I'll come to you in a minute, but I want to get Lisa Chambers' view on this, because we know it was the Fine Gael Minister, Emer Higgins, who'd asked for the delay here on this. Should we be listening to the businesses who are concerned, or should we listen to the people who don't want our streets clogged with cars?
Yeah, and I'm conscious that I live in Mayo, so I'm not a trader in Dublin city centre or living here, but I do work here during the week when I come to the Oireachtas. But Dublin is our capital city for the country. There are complaints about the city being, the air quality, the cleanliness, traffic congestion, and just that it's not an easy city to get in and out of and to come in and actually spend time in. And that's the message I would hear back. I'm conscious as well that Dublin City Council and the elected members of Dublin City Council have led on this. It is their decision. The Transportation Strategic Policy Committee published their report, and I don't think government ministers should be, I suppose, usurping that. I think that the councillors are the people leading on this, and they have an elected mandate from the people living and working and trading in this city.
So Emer Higgins shouldn't have
Know. Well, I'm not saying she shouldn't get involved. Obviously, she's an elected representative in Dublin as well. And again, I'm conscious that I'm not. But I'm aware just that this is a decision by our councillors, and they have a mandate.
They didn't take the decision on this, as I understand it. It was an executive decision, but it was supported. It had cross-party support by all of the elected members in the council. So do you agree with Cian then that it should just go ahead in August?
Look, I suppose I'm conscious that, you know, change is always difficult. I take on board what the traders are saying. I've only seen the reports about the reports. Yeah. I don't know the methodology or how they arrived at those figures, but they are significant figures. I've listened to, you know, representatives on the other side of the lobby as well who want this to go ahead. My understanding is that when changes are made, they could be reversed if there was an unforeseen, terrible outcome from these changes. But we have to get the city moving properly. It's deeply congested. And this has gone through a public consultation. There are, I think, 3,500 submissions to this. So it isn't something that happened overnight. And I think the intention behind the traffic plan, it's a good intention. It's to get things moving better. And like, I've cycled in the city when I lived here years ago for college. I know it's improved a bit, but it's quite dangerous cycling in the city. We have to address that.
Yeah, I don't know what it's like now because I haven't done it in years. It was terrifying, absolutely terrifying at one point. So, Sive, the group that we're talking about, the Retail Alliance, I mean, some people who are supportive of this plan have said, what are we doing listening to car park owners? But it's not just car park owners in that group. It's the Restaurants Association as well. It is other retail businesses who are really worried about what's going to happen as a result of this.
Yes, it's worrying actually to see the number of businesses that are involved in this relatively small alliance, because each of them have environmental and social obligations actually to themselves, to their own shareholders and their owners under the law. And I'm frustrated by the complaint that the communications are at fault here, because in fact it is the car park and retailer lobby here that have done most of the scaremongering. The plan is not a radical plan. It doesn't ban cars. It diverts through traffic. And it just reflects the way people are already moving around the city, and it starts to reallocate road space to the most efficient modes. So it's actually a plan to improve the bus efficiency more than anything else. And anyone who wants to drive to those car parks will still be able to do so. They'll be able to get to all of those city centre car parks. So one of the concerns I have is that report.
But Sive, if you're running a business in the city centre and you have commissioned this report, and Cian, who supports the plan, has said, really, it should have been Dublin City Council that carried out this economic assessment. But anyway, they didn't. So it's the only one that we have. And you see the 2,000 jobs could be lost and hundreds of millions could be wiped off retail sales. But you're entitled to have a fear about that if that is something that you've been presented with.
Where did those figures come from?
Well, they commissioned the report because Dublin City Council didn't do it.
Yes, but it's a self-serving report, Claire. And the reality is that the 141 million figure that they came up with is actually paling in comparison to the cost of congestion. So even if it was correct, and many analysts are casting a lot of doubt on that figure, it doesn't square with the fact that there are 350 million euro lost to the Dublin economy every year just because of congestion. And that figure is to rise to 1.5 billion by 2040. I mean, this is a no-brainer. We can go to any city in Europe and look at what's been done. Look at Paris, look at Vienna, look at London. Dublin could be heaven. We need to show our city some love here. And that means just restricting cars where it's possible to improve public transport and the public realm.
Can we go back to communication and messaging? Because rather than accusing them of you know, coming up with a self-serving report, should you not be saying to them, this is going to really help you, it's going to be really beneficial for you?
Yeah. No, I do agree with that point, and Cian is right. If the city had done its own economic analysis, but in fairness to them, in fact, they hired consultants, ACOM, who did a lot of research in advance of the transport plan, which is aligned with the city's development plan. So everything has been really thought out in this process. It was debated and deliberated by the city councillors, and it was agreed to go ahead with it. So at this last minute, at the 11th hour, we're seeing this interruption, this interference by a very small number of car park owners and retailers, and their concerns have been well ventilated through.
They're not the only ones, because we had a government minister as well calling for a delay.
There is a legitimate authority, the Dublin Chamber of Commerce, which represents over 1,000 businesses in the city and 300,000 workers, and they have completely backed the plan. So it is not the case that all businesses in Dublin are opposed to this. So that is a miscommunication. The reality is there's a consensus
around this, and a tiny minority
are trying to hold the city to ransom.
But they are entitled to have a view. And the fact is Richard Shakespeare, who told me in this studio that he was fully behind the plan, he is listening to these people. And, well, and he is the man who controls this decision and will ultimately decide. He has said before the 22nd of July he will make up his mind as to whether it goes ahead or
and,
not.
And that's great, but it's kind of scary that the chief executive of Dublin City Council has the last word on this and that he can override the wishes of city councillors, as Lisa was saying.
Well, that's his
job. It speaks to the need, really, for an elected mayor for Dublin, because Richard Shakespeare has no mandate from the people.
But this is how it is set up. This is how, you know, our local democracy is run now. You know, be it right or wrong, this is how the decision is made. And he has every right to listen to those groups if that's what he chooses to do. I mean, we'll have to have legislative change if we want to turn around how we run the city, as you say. You know, perhaps there is a case for a directly elected mayor, but this is the system that we have.
If you're the chief executive of the capital city of a growing economy, you need to be thinking about the public interest. You need to be balancing climate action, air pollution, the health impacts of this congestion, the economic cost to the city. When you weigh all of those things up, the obvious thing to do is to improve the public realm, make the city safer and more pleasant. And everything that's proposed in this plan will do that.
And we don't know what his decision is going to be. What we do know is what he said to me in this studio was that he fully backed the plan a couple of months ago. So we await and see what his decision will be. Claire Scott, can I bring you in on this? Because we have a clash in government now. We have the Transport Minister, Eamon Ryan, who really wants this plan. He was the one who said it should absolutely go ahead in August. And we have Fine Gael, Emer Higgins saying, no, you've got to pause it.
Yeah, I think it is interesting that this is kind of happening in the last hour of this plan as well. I mean, this has been in the making for a long time. A lot of people have been behind it for such a long time. So the fact that we now have this report and we also have kind of Fine Gael kind of trying to put the stopper in all of this is very interesting. So it's difficult to see what will happen, but I think that on the back of what we've seen with the EPA report and the fact that we have kind of 6.8% drop in emissions now, that's very positive. We have these 2030 targets to make. Their sacrifices probably need to be made. But it's interesting to see what will happen at government level, if this will be a Fine Gael pushback in terms of looking to seek to support businesses ahead of general election.
You mentioned the EPA report, which is another issue we want to talk about now, because it was a major headline from during the week. So our emissions have come down by 6.8% in spite of economic growth. And you wonder and you fear whether we'll all go, oh, that's great now, and sit back in our chairs and exhale and not do anything else. Cian, you're nodding in agreement. Do you think that's a possible outcome of something like that?
Yeah, look, it's certainly positive that emissions are going down, but we're still off course actually to meet our targets.
Way off course, aren't
we? Way off course. Our legally are legally committed to targets. So we need to have a larger decrease next year, 8.3% this year and next year, 2024 and 2025, just to meet our targets for 2025. And otherwise, we're facing into very large fines and billions of euros. So there is progress there. Some of it came from a mild winter. Some of it came from the very high costs for fossil fuels. So there's a lot more we need to be doing. For example, on public transport emissions actually went up marginally last year when we should be going in the other direction. Huge amount that could be done in areas like building construction, where there's a huge amount of emissions and we're way behind other countries like France and Denmark. There we're using high carbon concrete anytime we go to build anything. Other countries are using low carbon concrete, which is the same cost. There's just a range of different things that could be done that would help us meet our targets. So yes, it's absolutely positive to see that we can
It can be done, but we can't relax
here. This is the start.
Yeah. What would be the quickest way to respond to reducing those emissions further, Sive?
Well, just to take the transport sector, because that's where we saw a slight increase of 0.3%. The emissions have come down, relatively speaking, in transport because we're using biodiesel and bioethanol as a fuel. So the actual greenhouse gas emissions from that sector are still very worryingly, stubbornly high. So when you're looking at transport, the fastest way to get emissions down is to reallocate road space. It's to get people into public transport. So rolling out bus connects, rolling out new rural bus schemes, improving the train connectivity, the frequency of train journeys and more stops and new rail routes, and of course, active travel. So it's really important that we don't lose sight of the fact that all of the measures in the Climate Action Plan that are being delivered are actually working, but that we need to keep working. We need a pipeline of projects so that hopefully after the next budget, maybe in the next programme for government, we might see a 5-to-1 reorientation or prioritisation of public transport and active travel.
Well, it was the Greens who fought for that ratio the last time. We don't know where we will be with the Greens in government. And that is a big question mark, isn't it?
But these aren't party political goals. They are legally binding under European law, Irish law, and under the Paris Agreement. Mm-hmm. And like you can squirm all you like about them. You can, you know, reject them and say they're not this, they're not that. But the reality is any government taking power after the next general election will have to stick with more or less with the same plans and policies. And there's flexibility about rolling them out in ways that are more affordable and more beneficial.
But they'll still have to be done.
But they'll still have to be done.
Lisa, do you think that there's a realisation across the political spectrum that, you know, the green agenda, whether they're there or not after the next election, will have to be carried on?
Like, I think things have shifted a lot. You know, I mean, I suppose to acknowledge that for a long time, the Green Party were the only party talking about green issues, you know, as a priority. But I do think every party is green now because things have moved and the public have moved. And we all know what we need to do to make sure that for our children's future, that we protect the planet and that we protect biodiversity loss and we restore nature. So I think everybody's on board with that. And, you know, what I take from this, the emissions coming down, you know, there's been a lot of catastrophizing around climate issues that it's just nearly, it's not achievable and we'll never get there. But look at agriculture, for example, down by 4.6%, the one that always gets hammered. It's moving and it's working. And I know we've got a way to go yet, but, you know, continued investment in retrofitting, which is at record levels. When we look at the acre scheme under agriculture, that's been oversubscribed and more have been led into that scheme than was planned. And you look at the fund that was set up by Michael McGrath last year, the Infrastructure, Climate and Nature Fund, to actually put money away for down the line to provide for continued investment in climate projects to make sure that we can continue that green transition. So, you know, I just think we're well underway. We have to move away from presenting green as a straitjacket. There's massive opportunities
but do
in
you,
green.
Do you think you and Fianna Fáil feel the pressure to spend as much as you need to on climate change?
But that's because that's the narrative taken by some, that green is somehow bad or spending on climate projects is bad. It improves our quality of life. We want investment in transport. And there's a big focus today on Dublin and Bus Connects. But think about rural Ireland. I mean, I live in the west of Ireland. I want to see the Western Rail Corridor delivered. I want to see more bus transportation, more train times coming out of our stations there as well. And we're on the way to doing that. So, you know, green can be an opportunity. And we look at the projects now for offshore renewable energy and wind energy. I think there are fantastic opportunities for Ireland in the green space, and we have to present it that way as opposed to being negative all the time.
Claire, for the neutral take on this, do you think that political pressure to spend on the green agenda is felt, that there's a clear understanding that that's where a lot of the money has to go now?
I think it's still going to be housing and health, and I think that will be what will be fought over coming into the next general election. I think that it will be interesting to see what will happen post-general election if the Greens aren't at the table. It's hard to see who will be driving that among all of the other political parties. I think there are individuals within each political party who really want to drive climate action, but it's hard to see when you don't have a green base if that's actually going to happen. But again, I think housing and health will always be a priority
and
for
listen,
the rest of them.
Staying on the same track, are we all going to have to pay more now for our green bins because of the deposit return scheme, Si? You would have seen that during the week.
It's kind of an interesting turn of events. So basically, the waste streams that went into the green bin that are now going into the vending machines actually had an economic value to them. And once these bottles and cans are going into the return machines, the utility companies, the waste companies are complaining that they've lost revenue and they're looking for a bailout. And that's a very interesting complaint coming from an industry that's highly profitable and that isn't as closely regulated, in my opinion, as it should be. So the cost to the householder of waste disposal is actually quite high in Ireland, and the facilities and the standard of civic community facilities varies dramatically around the country. It's not uniform. And there is still a problem of flight tipping and all the other waste disposal issues. One of the reasons for introducing the return scheme is that the quality of material in the green bin was very poor. It was contaminated and it wasn't possible for them to get the full value of it. Mm-hmm. So there is
That's the consumer's fault.
But it speaks to this bigger problem that what we think is recyclable is a lot of it is rubbish that isn't recyclable. It's going to be incinerated. So this measure to take that particular waste stream out and use a deposit and return was really welcome. And it's actually taking a lot of street litter, both from the street litter bins and, you know, people walking around with bottles and cans, out of the waste stream, which is fantastic because those were never getting into green bins in the first place. And the amount of bottles and cans that have been collected is absolutely astronomical. Mm-hmm. It's huge. So it speaks to the fact that we have a major problem. We don't have a circular economy. We're not using our resources properly. And the bin companies are making a profit out of that fact. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to have a review, essentially. And I think it's time to have a look at the Waste Management Act to see if the way that the waste companies are delivering services is fit for purpose.
A bit of an unintended consequence, isn't it? Lisa, if our bin chargers go up on the back of the deposit
return scheme. I would just make one point that a lot of the companies are actually not, the bottle companies are actually on the board of return. So there's a way in which the waste industry is regulating itself. It sets up repack, it sets up return. You know, there's a lot of it's a bit close for comfort sometimes.
Okay. That was never an intention, wasn't it? Was it, Lisa, that we would be paying more for the green bin because of the successful deposit return scheme?
No, and interestingly, some of the waste companies actually increased their prices before the deposit return scheme came into operation. And they do still get a rebate from Repack for other items that are recyclable but not included in the deposit return scheme. So there's a more detail to the story than is sometimes out there. And I do think that it's been, it had a few teething problems at the start, but 90 million items were returned to the DRS in the month of June and 250 million since it started. So it's working.
Yeah.
And it's getting litter off the streets. And even the bottle caps that are causing people some issues that are stuck to the bottles, you know, that's good for wildlife and birds because they're not falling onto the ground. So
driving people bananas. It's a constant topic, isn't it?
It's not that annoying, is it?
It doesn't bother me because you just twist them around and then they're out of your way. But it does drive some people around the bend.
Yeah. But then people don't like change no matter what it is. But we'll get used to things because I think people appreciate that it's for the right reasons.
Okay, listen, I want to move on to Joe Biden because the news has just been dominated. I think we've spoken about this every day this week on the programme. This dilemma facing the Democrats in the US, whether he should stay in the race or make way for the next generation. So he had the lengthy press conference last night. He had two biggish verbal gaffes. Earlier, he was introducing President Zelensky of Ukraine and he referred to him as President Putin. Very quickly corrected himself, we have to say. But then later he referred to Vice President Trump when he meant to speak about Kamala Harris. Now, before we chat about it, our reporter Maura Fay was out and about in Dundalk this morning, where Joe Biden, you might remember from his visit here, has family links. And she was asking people in the town if he should stay in the race or quit now.
Yeah, it's my opinion that, you know, he's well adored, well loved in America and here in Ireland. But I think he's having problems with his cognitive understanding. So, yeah, for such a big role, an important role in the world, I think somebody else will have to take over.
I think he should drop out. I don't think he's all there at the minute.
Do you think he should stay running in the race?
Yes, I do, yeah. Because he's a very popular man in America. More than popular, you know. Especially with the Irish-Americans, you know what I mean?
You're not worried about his cognitive function?
No. As long as he's capable of doing the job, and while capable of doing the job, he's OK. When the day comes that he can't do the job, he won't be there. It's as simple as that.
He should drop out, surely. Because he's as old as himself.
How old are you?
84.
And you feel that he's too old to be US president?
I do, yeah.
I think he should drop out. He's too elderly and he seems to be losing the run of himself at times, not properly able to answer and stuff like that.
I think a few things he said recently has highlighted that he might not be able to stay in the race or probably shouldn't stay in the race.
Oh, I think everyone's saying he should drop out.
He should stay in. He's a good man.
Well, I'd like him to stay in it. I think he should stay in it, if you got a chance.
We don't want the other fella, but he's no good. Oh. We want Joe Biden.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Don't leave Joe Biden.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I think that most people, though, in that Vox Pop, people speaking to Maura Fay, said that he should drop out at this stage. Claire, I'll come to you first on this. What do you think?
I think last night was completely unfortunate, but I think it demonstrates what's going to happen from here on out until November 5th, which is every time he makes a slip or a gaffe, that is going to be cut and clipped and shared online, and it'll become a complete distraction for the Democrats.
You see, the press conference last night where he took questions and he was standing on his own in the stage, that was an hour long, and he actually did pretty well. He was very good on policy, very good on foreign policy, very good on economics, very good on taking on Trump. But the two little gaffes that he made, which were seconds long, and he corrected himself on the Putin one, they're the ones that make the headlines. And it's very hard to escape that happening.
I think so. It's going to be so hard for him to recover from that debate 2 weeks ago. And I think this will be the focus for his entire campaign if he remains. Whereas if he steps out sooner rather than later, he can hand over the reins to someone who can, focus on what the Democrats want to focus this campaign on, which is going to be policy, and also focus on, Trump's inefficiencies, which there are many.
Now, Lisa, as a seasoned politician, how do you see this playing out for him?
You have to feel for him, because what an awful end to such a long career where he has achieved a lot. And his options really are run the race and lose, which I think is what's going to happen. And that, all of the polling, even before the debate with Trump, showed that he was on the back foot. And then does he himself step out of the race? What a terrible end to his career. And it's a really unpalatable choice. There's no easy option for him. But, if you're looking at it, there's going to be core Democrat voters that will vote for him just because he's Democrat.
Yeah.
And then you've got the same on the Republican side. But if you're a swing voter, the only reason now to vote for Joe Biden really is that you have very strong feelings against Trump. And that's a very risky space to be in. He's at an age where I think he's a little bit gaffe prone anyways. But those two gaffes from last evening's interview, they were major. To refer to President Zelensky as President Putin.
Do you not think it's a simple enough slip to make if you've just mentioned Vladimir Putin and
I just the context, because he introduced him as the president of Ukraine. It's as bad as it gets, really. But I just think, besides last night, people cannot unsee the debate. And what's happened since then, we haven't heard anything from Donald Trump, because all he and his team are doing are sitting back and letting the Democrats eat themselves up. It is just painful to watch. And meanwhile, the rest of the world is watching on going, oh my God, are we getting back Trump for 4 years? And everyone's really concerned about, what he'll do in terms of his foreign policy, in terms of climate issues. There's a lot at stake. It makes it very difficult watching.
The sound bites that we heard, Cian, the two gaffes, they can be really cruel, because, as I said to you there earlier, I don't think they represent the full picture of what happened last night. But do you think that this is where it's at? Every little false move now is going to be scrutinised and fingers pointed. I mean, do you think that he can stay in the race, given, as Lisa says, you can't unsee the debate performance a few weeks ago?
Yeah, I think that's the problem, is the whole US presidential debate is really now focusing in on Biden's gaffes, and we should be discussing how President, good work that he's done as president, how Donald Trump is completely unsuitable. Trump has multiple charges, convictions, his foreign policy, his support for being soft on Putin, terrible in climate change, all these things. But there's not a mention of that. It's all on Joe Biden's gaffes. And he should be able to exit now, I think, in a dignified way. He's had 4 years as president, the highest political office in the world. He should be happy with that, proud of that. And I think people would actually respect him more if he exited now in a dignified way and let someone else go forward.
Do you think he will, Sive?
I think he might be forced to eventually. It's very hard to imagine that he won't make further slips. And all of the focus on him means that everything is going to be picked up on. Things that would be acceptable from you or me, he won't be forgiven for any further mistakes.
Yeah.
And the reality is that the future of America's democracy is at stake here. I mean, I have no great love for many of the leading Democrats in the US, but the reality is they need a candidate who can beat Trump. That is fundamentally important.
And if they're going to change
so much at stake,
they need to do it. They need to do it now.
Exactly.
We're at the end. Thank you all very much for coming in. That's all we have time for today.